So I've called this presentation Becoming Shariputra. So Hridayagita gave us an overview of the Heart Sutra yesterday and the six great thunderclaps, and she was talking about how the Heart Sutra is this dramatic dialogue between Shariputra, who is our own limited intellectual understanding, and Avalokiteshvara, who embodies perfect wisdom with all the boxes blown open, with no divisions anywhere else in the world. But of course, the whole point of it is that we can't open to Avalokiteshvara unless we have already become Shariputra, and we already are looking at quite a deep level at our experience. So this is what we're going to be talking about today. So I'm particularly going to be talking about the five skandhas. So they're completely central in the Heart Sutra, and Avalokiteshvara is saying that they're all empty. So we're not going to worry about what that means at the moment. We're not going to worry about them being empty. That's tomorrow. but we're just going to be looking at what are the five skandhas, what are those teachings. And the five skandhas is a really sort of crucial piece of Buddhist doctrine or teaching. And it was taught by the Buddha very, very widely, and it would also have been taught by Shariputra, the real historical Shariputra. And when it was being taught by the Buddha and the real historical Shariputra, the five skandhas was a perspective that we could bring to bear on our experience that would take us all the way. Apparently, Shariputra was a very sort of, he was a very friendly chap, and he was a very, very clear teacher. And he and his great friend Moggallana, the two chief disciples of the Buddha, they would teach all the new practitioners that came along to the Buddha. And Shariputra would take the new ones, and he would take them right the way through up until they gained stream entry, direct insight into the true nature of things. And then Moggallana, who was a bit more sort of a mystical bent, and then he'd take them over after that and kind of like just keep them expanding into the cosmos. So we're really going to be listening to Shariputra teaching today. This is a poem about one of the earliest female practitioners, one of the earliest female Buddhist practitioners. And she's talking about her own practice of the five skandhas, and she is describing attaining enlightenment. Four or five times I left my cell. I had no peace of mind, no control over my mind. I went to a nun I thought I could trust. She taught me the Dharma, the elements of body and mind, the nature of perception, and earth, water, fire, and wind. I heard what she said, and sat cross-legged 7 days full of joy. When on the eighth I stretched my feet out, the great dark was torn apart. So when she's talking about going to this nun she thought she could trust, she taught me the elements of body and mind, the nature of perception. And that's what the five skandhas are. They're the elements of body and mind. And they're asking us to look at the nature of perception. And that poem is somebody attaining direct realization through using the five skandhas. So Uttama, she doesn't need the Heart Sutra, okay? She's there. So you've got a handout in front of you on the five skandhas, mainly just so you don't feel you've got to write down everything that I'm going to say, okay? Like, it's all in books, and the basics are on that handout. So, you know, write something down if it's interesting, but don't feel like You've got to put everything down. So the five skandhas are a way of us breaking down our experience to look more directly, to be able to experience more directly. So they're a method, okay? They're not, we've got all of experience, so all everything, like what we think of as things, so like tables and carpets and sofas and trees and flowers and grass and sky. And that's all included in the five skandhas. And so are all our mental events, all our experience, everything in conditioned existence can be looked at in terms of the five skandhas. And like, why would we do this? The reason we're using this framework to look at our experience is because, because mostly we don't look at our experience, even if we're trying. Mostly, we walk around with a lot of assumptions about how things are. We assume that there is a me in here. We assume that there are things out there. We assume that there are kind of like solid people with like black felt tip lines around them. And what we're assuming is that people and things are fixed, unchanging, not shifting, not process. And we think that that's what our experience is telling us. The five skandhas are saying, look again, look again. My dad, I'm very fond of my dad actually, and he was a research physicist. He spent the whole of his working life as a research physicist. And I was actually chatting to him about this very retreat when I was staying with him at Christmas. And he said to me, well, and he wasn't actually talking about this at all, but he was talking about his work. And he said, when you're looking at a problem in physics, you know, you'd get presented with this problem and then asked to investigate it. And he said, what you've got to do is you've just got to drop all your common sense assumptions. You can't take anything for granted. Because if you just go on your common sense, you're never going to be looking at the data. You're just going to be assuming it's in line with what you think you know. So common sense is fantastic. It's like it's the sum total of like everything that we, you know, how we function in the world. But because it's like all based on it's based on a certain way of looking. And so if that's what we're relying on, we're never going to find a new way of looking. We're never going to find a new way of perceiving. And he was saying that was the attitude that he had to bring to doing physics research. And he also said, physics doesn't follow common sense. So, you know, and Buddhism would go along with that. The nature of reality does not necessarily follow what our common sense is telling us. So can we bring an attitude of curiosity and like an awareness that maybe we don't know? Because if we think we do know, we're just not open to any other data coming in. So this is what the five skandhas is trying to open us up to see. So probably just two more points. One is they're not theoretical. All of this we're going to be looking at in our own experience. And the other thing is, as I go through them, they're not a problem, okay? We're not trying to get rid of any of these aspects of our experience. They're all completely fine. We're just trying to be more aware of them. Okay, so let's go into looking at them individually. So you'll notice on the handout, I've got the Sanskrit down there. And I like using the Sanskrit because it's clear. So it's like there are various English translations, and you'll see down there I've put various ones of them. And when you read a book and some, you know, it says, I don't know, interpretation, and you think, does it mean that scandal, or are they just using that term in a kind of like standard English way? And it's just not quite clear what's going on. So you've got the handouts, and I am going to be using the Sanskrit. So, first skanda, rupa, form. Don't know why that feels exciting, but somehow it does. So what's exciting, I think, about rupa or form is everything we know, all of our experience, in a way, comes in through our senses. So in Buddhism, we have the six senses. We have the mind as sense, and we have the five physical senses. And we were doing a meditation yesterday where we were looking at the five physical senses. So what rupa is referring to is our sense data, our sense data. Now, there's actually quite a radical shift in perception involved in thinking about rupa and form, because in the West, I mean, I'm not sure that at the time of the Buddha in the East, they actually had this sort of view going on. But definitely in the West, we have a very, very strong split between matter. So that's stuff that's solid, it's particles, it can be looked at, it's out there. And mind, which is it's internal, it's sort of secondary. Does it really exist? We're not quite sure. Is it just a byproduct of matter? So you've got matter as being like the primary thing that's real. Matter is real. And then mind is a bit of a sort of like in the background, what is that going on? And there's this very, very clear split, matter and mind. And actually, like when you get into quantum physics, even in the Western scientific model, it just isn't like that. It just isn't like that. So you may have heard that in that, these sort of quantum physics discoveries, when you really get down to it, when you're really analysing the tiniest particles, it stops, there stops being any distinction between matter and energy. So if you're looking in one sort of a way, something will behave like a particle, like it's matter. And if you're looking in another sort of a way, it looks like a wave, it looks like energy. So you could just sort of like turn that around in your mind and just sort of think, does that match my common sense? And probably the answer will be no, it won't match your common sense. So the basic shift with rupa is thinking, okay, so I've got an experience, say, of solidity. Say I'm touching the table. We're all sat on something, and we've got an experience of resistance. Something's holding us up. And that's sensation. But where is that? Like, how do we know any of that? The only thing that we actually know is our own direct sense experience. We know our own perception. So there's this sort of shift between assuming that there's real things out there and a sort of real solid me here, to thinking what we have is a perceptual situation. There's just this sense experience and consciousness of this sense experience, and then we're assuming things out of our experience. So the shift is between assuming that everything's real, solid and fixed, to thinking of it as there's objects of perception and we perceive ourselves, you know, we've got experience going on. This is all actually the territory of mindfulness, okay? So I'll be saying this and you'll probably be like slightly boggling, okay, and thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that. But in a way, it doesn't matter, because either when we're meditating and we're just trying to be with our experience, like whatever the sounds are that are coming in, allowing ourselves to be present to that. What are the sensations of sitting on this chair? Just allowing ourselves to be present to that. And actually, it's like our minds open, like there's space in things. And as a method, it's like the nature of things announces itself if we come at it with interest and we're bringing fascination and curiosity to, like, what is this experience? It's like a mystery. What is rupa? What is form? What are our senses telling us? So probably the main thing we need to do is just keep looking and keep a sense of mystery and fascination. So, like I said, none of these are theoretical, okay? These are all to be looked for in our own experience. So meditation, looking at body, that's really obvious. Also, just in the everyday, how do we do rupa practice? Well, say you were one of those people trying to cook supper last night when all the lights and the gas went out. Well, you could ask yourself, how does my body feel at the moment? Like, what is my direct experience going on at this moment? Quite often, actually, when we're just busy in doing things and we ask ourselves the question, what's my body doing at the moment? The answer is like, I mean, for me, it's like, I have no idea. I'm completely disconnected from it. But it's a very good thing to kind of bring in. So kind of noticing in everyday situations, is the tension, is the particularly sensation somewhere? Just noticing. Right, Vedana. So the Heart Sutra translation for this is feeling. And on the handout, I've got it as feeling tone or hedonic tone, which means to do with pleasure and pain. I think feeling's a bit imprecise because it could mean an emotion. So what we're particularly talking about with Vedana is a direct sense of something being pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. And every sense contact, so everything in rupa and everything in our mind as sense, will have a vedana. So as I'm sitting here, my fingers are slightly cold, slightly unpleasant vedana. I'm quite comfortable in my posture, pleasant vedana. I don't know. There are slight sounds of people shifting around. It's not particularly pleasant, it's not particularly unpleasant. Neutral vedana. So at any moment, we'll all have millions of little vedanas going on. It's just little sensations of pleasure, pain, neutral. Do we like this? Do we not like this? Are we just ignoring this? This may be familiar to you from the 12 Nidanas. So this is the crucial point where there's a gap. There's a gap in the circle. So we have Vedana, we have something pleasant. So I see a cake, I have pleasant Vedana. And at that point, I can either choose to stay with the experience, to notice, pleasurable experience, or I can grab the cake. And of course, it is actually also possible to stay with the experience of pleasant Vedana and eat the cake. You know, it's not a no cake teaching. but very, very important aspect of our experience to look at. So in meditation, this can be a great way of taking it deeper. So we sat there in the mindfulness of breathing. And if it's not feeling that interesting, we can just look, okay, where is the pleasure Where is the pleasure in our experience at this moment? Also, where is the not pleasure in our experience at this moment? And just notice all the different vedanas going on, and it can really take us in. The metta bhavana is a vedana practice. We're bringing to mind someone we like, and that's pleasant vedana. Someone we don't really know, neutral vedana. And someone we find difficult, unpleasant vedana. And we're attempting to have a creative response instead of a knee-jerk response to that basic pleasure, pain, neutral. So, metta bhavana, completely a vedana practice. And in the everyday, I mean, actually noticing vedana is one of the things that can really put a wedge of awareness into our direct experience. So, say you were one of those people in the kitchen when the gas and the lights went off. In that moment, is it possible to notice? Thought arises, oh my goodness, the supper's going to be late, what do we do now? Where's Sally? And the vedana is probably painful. And simply bringing that thought to mind, like what is the vedana at this moment, can help us realise, oh yes, this is painful, and this means that we don't need to take all the next steps into, I don't know, a big story or a big aversion or a panic or irritation or anger or whatever it might be. So, vedana in everyday life, fantastic. It's quite helpful that we've had so many incidents where vedana might arise. Okay, so now we're coming on to samnya. Now, in the Heart Sutra, this is described as thought. I must say that is rather misleading as a translation. So thought will come into the next one, sanskaras. But you can see what they're getting at, because other interpretations of other English terms for samnya would be perception, recognition, interpretation. And it's like samnya, it's like we're samnyaring, it's something we do. And it's like making sense of the mass of data. We have all this sort of sense data, and then we've got the vedana coming towards us. How do we make sense of all this mass of sense impressions that are coming in? And what we do is we kind of like look at our data bank, and we're making sense of something as being like this or that. We're sort of seeing its particularity. So an example of this would be, you're walking to the shrine room and there's something on the path, and maybe it's dusk or something, and you look down and you think, oh, is it a twig? Oh no, it's a slug. So you're seeing something and you're recognizing that either it's a twig or it's a leaf or it's a slug, and then you can make a choice whether, you know, if it's a leaf you don't need to worry about whether you stand on it or not, and if it's a slug you probably want to step over it carefully so you don't squash it. What's funny about that? Well, I would want to step over it and not squash it. And this is just happening all the time, where it's like we're creating things out of our sense experience. Now, it might sound like this is where a problem lies. You know, there's the Dharma trying to tell us all about impermanence and how everything is flow and not seeing things as fixed. And then here we are creating things every time we look out. I mean, I just look out and I see this mass of things. Carpet, Helen's shoes, Ratna Vandana's pad. I'm just, you know, I'm samnyaring all the time. It's not really a problem in that sense, because, you know, the Buddha can still step over slugs, and it's very, very important to know the difference between a slug and a stick, or, you know, you're cooking, you want to know the difference between tamari and vinegar, you just wouldn't be able to function otherwise. So the problem with samnya comes when what we do is we just stop noticing. So I look over here to my right and I think sofa. And after I've stuck the label on it, it's like I just don't notice anymore. I think I've seen that sofa every time I've walked in this room for the last 7 years, and I'm just not going to notice anymore. I think we can see it most strongly in things we do habitually, like maybe if you have a particular journey to work or something like that, and you might walk past trees, houses, people. Maybe we go for a walk here, we walk along the canal. We saw it yesterday. Canal, we don't look again. Can we keep bringing a sense of interest, keep looking and keep noticing? When we're drinking a cup of tea, it's always a unique experience. Can we keep that level of interest? And it doesn't mean that we have to stop recognising it as a cup of tea. I think the other area where it's really easy to see our samnyaring is if you're looking at clouds or something like that, we just naturally have pictures form. I was doing a meditation retreat once and I had somebody with a patterned cardi in front of me, and I'd be looking at her cardi and there was just all these Scotty dogs playing with each other, and of course it wasn't anything to do with Scotty dogs, but it's like we just naturally try to see patterns and we naturally are trying to make sense of our sense impressions. So I've mentioned how you'd practice that in the everyday, you're noticing, going beyond the label. And in meditation, it can just be interesting to notice again when we're labelling and when we're not interested. When we're looking at sense impressions and we hear a bird, we've almost instantly imagined a bird out there. Okay, this is where... Okay, Helen, I've got a bag out and nobody can see inside the bag. Right, so this is going to be a demonstration of samnyaing. Okay. Helen, you'll have to tell me if you can hear this or not. I'll move the mic if you can't. Can you hear that, Helen? Okay, good. So... So just looking at what goes on in your experience when that sound is happening. So we can probably see all three of those skandhas that we've just looked at in our experience. So first, what is it? Any guesses? Okay, we've got a bag of Maltesers or a bag of crisps. I think there might be fantasy coming into that. Okay, that's sanskara. We're coming to that next. One of those hypothermia sheets. Anyone else?
Rice.
Rice. Anybody
pasta,
else?
Dried beans.
Dried beans, pasta. Plastic.
Tissue paper.
Okay, so you're all doing samnyaring, okay? So what it in fact is, some slightly squashed cornflakes. Sorry about the lack of Maltesers. So you're all samnyaring. As well, there will have been a vedana. So let me do it again. Pleasant, painful, neutral. Good. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure not everybody would think rustling cornflakes is pleasant. Painful, good. Exactly. So that's a really good point there. So when Joan realised it wasn't crisps or chocolate, it stopped being pleasant. So it started being pleasant vedana and it became painful vedana. So that's a really good demonstration of how our samnya affects how we perceive the world. What we think about something perceives the changes the world. And then under, you know, beneath the Vedana and the Samnya, there would have been direct sense experience. Like, what is that like to have that sound sensation come into our sense consciousness?
Irritating.
Okay, so that's not staying with the direct experience. That is sanskara. Okay, so that is a beautiful lead on. Thank you very much, Helen. So we're on to sanskara, which is the thing that happens after Vedana usually. So the translation in the Heart Sutra is choice, which, you know, is not bad as a translation goes. So other options for the translation would be volitions, will, desires and dislikes, and volitional formations. Actually, I really like volitional formations. And what these are is they are habitual ways of us responding to experience. And I think the reason why I love volitional formations so much is because it sort of sounds like a sort of physical geography term, which is exactly like what our sanskaras are. So I do just get this image of, I don't know, maybe one of those valleys with a river running through it, and the river is winding through the meadows and doing all these sort of wiggles and waggles. And actually, the course of those rivers changes over time. There are areas that kind of get worn away, and the river goes straight through them, and it like cuts off a big loop, and you get an oxbow lake, and or it deposits it on a corner, and you get these big sweeps as the river just gets wider and broader. And they're changing all the time. And if you live in one of these places, which I used to in Surrey, we used to have quite a lot like this, you can see the river changing where it runs. And that is like our volitional formations. So they're like the sort of sum total of the habits that create our personalities. And they've been built up over millions and millions of choices, over probably millions and millions of lifetimes. So why I particularly like that analogy is it brings out the two aspects of sanskaras. So the two aspects you've got on your sheet, there's karma vipaka and there's karma. So you probably all know karma means action and vipaka means fruit. And it's like the where that riverbed runs, that's like the vipaka, it's the result. None of us are sitting here thinking, what a great idea, I really chose all this irritability, or I chose to be anxious, or I chose to be really clinging with my partner, or, you know, whatever it may be. It's like we've ended up with the personalities we've got, and the water, so when it rains in those valleys, the water all runs in a certain way, and it all ends up flowing down this main channel. And in a way, it's like we can't choose that. Like, here we are at the point in time that we are. And we can't go back in time and change any of the past choices or anything like that. It's like our riverbeds and our gullies, they just are the way they are. And then we work with them from there. I think forgiveness is a really good point in that. Like, whatever our tendencies are, can we bring forgiveness? And then there's karma, which is the active aspect of sanskaras. And that is, in this moment, what choice am I going to make? What choice am I going to make? And we don't have a completely free choice. You know, say you're a person with a tendency for anxiety, and the lights go out and the gas goes off in the kitchen. Like, probably anxiety is going to arise. We cannot choose to have that not arise. But what we can do is think, okay, can I bring awareness to this? Create a sanskara of awareness around it. what is the most creative response that I can muster, given the fact that my karma viparka, my habitual formations, are the way they are? What is the most creative choice I can form in this moment? So this includes all the territory of thoughts, stories, the sort of inner chatter that kind of starts up when you wake up in the morning and doesn't stop until you go to bed at night, and emotions. And again, they're not a problem. Like, we're not trying to get rid of thoughts. We're not trying to get rid of emotions. We're simply bringing awareness to them. So in meditation, if we're thinking a lot, we simply notice we're thinking, and we might ask ourselves, is there an underlying emotion? What is the emotion underneath this? Mostly, if we can simply experience the emotion driving the thought, everything sort of calms down. Over time, things calm down. Can we directly stay with the emotion without getting identified, lost in it? And again, this is all the territory of mindfulness. Everyday life, if anxiety arises, we bring the awareness. This is sanskara. This is a karma viparka of anxiety. And just that, it's the wedge of awareness. And then we're relating very differently to it. We're recognizing sanskara, and we're not being driven by it. Then we have consciousness, vijnana. So with the Sanskrit there, we've got the vi, that means divided, and jnana, awareness. So it's divided consciousness, or awareness that perceives in terms of self and other. And so what is that? It's like the awareness or the consciousness that we have all the time. So we sleep and we dream, and that's awareness. And we wake and we know that waking up is, you know, either we ping out of bed and we know we're awake, or we kind of go, oh, I've got to get up. But it's like there's an awareness all the time. If we're sleepy in meditation, we're aware that we're sleepy. All the time, there's awareness holding the other skandhas. So awareness is like what holds it all. And it's divided awareness, as in we are perceiving the world in terms of me, self, line, other, out there. So we're seeing everything as separate. And one of the terms for wisdom is jnana, so not divided awareness, undivided awareness. But this human consciousness that we have, it's like it's of the nature that we can see the nature of reality, and we can open into seeing things undivided. And when we're talking about bringing space into our perspective, and allowing our awareness to open and become more spacious, what we're doing is we're working with vijnana. So our minds can be small, contracted. I can be really sort of tied up with, oh, I've got this to do, and I'm worried about that, and what about the other thing, and they said this to me yesterday. And we get this physical sense of being sort of tight and cramped and small. And then maybe we go and meditate, or we go and stand outside and we listen to the birds, or we go for a walk or something, or we come on retreat. And there's like a physical sensation of things opening. Our minds get more spacious and more open. Everything looks more beautiful. And that is vijnana, opening and expanding. And this is what we're trying to do. This is what we're trying to do. And when awareness is brought to everything that is arising, actually, it's like we don't need to be creating this difference between me and world. And vijnana just naturally opens into jnana, undividedness, non-separation, interconnectedness. And that is what the Heart Sutra is talking about when it is talking about emptiness. So all we need to do is bring awareness to the five skandhas. Look for the five skandhas in our direct experience, whether we're meditating, whether we're simply having a cup of tea, whether we're going for a walk. We can simply bring awareness to those aspects of our experience, and by itself, that opens things up. So I'm going to finish with another nun's poem. I think what I love about them is it always sounds like they struggled. They didn't find it easy. This is a nun called Mitakali. Although I left home for no home and wandered full of faith, I was still greedy for possessions and praise. I lost my way, my passions used me, and I forgot the real point of my wandering life. Then, as I sat in my little cell, there was only terror. I thought, this is the wrong way. A fever of longing controls me. Life is short. Age and sickness gnaw away. I have no time for carelessness before this body breaks. And as I watched the elements of mind and body rise and fall away, I saw them as they really are. I stood up. My mind was completely free. The Buddha's teaching has been done. So I've got two questions for the groups. Are we able to identify the skandhas in our own experience? Are we able to identify the skandhas in our own experience and maybe think of a particular incident where you sort of think, oh yeah, there was that skandha and that skandha and that skandha, and you can talk about that in the groups. And which of the five skandhas do we identify with most? Where do we look at one of the skandhas and we're thinking, well, that's me, that skandha. So that's questions for the group. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do now is move into a silent tea break. And what I would like you to do is to notice the five skandhas arising and falling as you go. So maybe you get a cup of tea and you've got the sense experience of the tea, rupa. You've got vedana, what's pleasant, painful, neutral. You've got samnya, you're recognising which tea you're taking, just noticing it. Sanskaras, are you having craving or aversion, emotions, thoughts going on? And vijnana, noticing your own awareness, your own alive awareness. Okay, and we'll meet in the shrine room at 12 o'clock. And if you could bring your outdoor clothes, that would be good.